how my mother had been treated, and elation that one day I might get to see her again. Elation won out. "I look forward to that," I said. "And I'm glad your dog is back home, even though he's destined to kill my dad. But right now, do me a favor." I rolled over and pulled up the covers. "Go to Helheim."
Niflheim. So's Your Face by Mallory Keane. Dragon Scales. Standing in the floor 19 hallway, half-empty pizza box in hand, I glared at Halfborn Gunderson. He'd opened his door just a crack. "You're seriously telling me you're traveling to Vanaheim to get dragon scales?" I asked. "Straight off a dragon, no less." "It's for a little project I'm working on." The shirtless berserker avoided my eyes. Coward. I tried to push my way in, but my on-again, off-again boyfriend set his massive foot against the slightly ajar door, making our relationship dangerously close to off again. "That's the way you want to play it? Fine." I snatched a slice of pizza from the box, slapped him in the chest with it, and stormed off. "Mallory, wait." When I didn't stop, Halfborn swore a blue streak and slammed his door. Maybe he was looking for his room key, planning to follow. Well, I didn't want to see him or his pizza-stained chest anymore. So I bypassed my room, yanked open a random door, and stalked through, slamming it behind me. Then I literally froze. Oh, Fimbulwinter. Hotel Valhalla has countless unmarked doors. Most are shortcuts to other areas of the hotel. A few lead to other worlds. Just my luck. I'd exited right into Niflheim, the land of endless sleet and ice and plenty of frost giants. Even luckier, a blizzard was raging around me. Cursing, I dug a small square of fabric out of my pocket. Handmade by Blitzen, it unfolded into a thick hooded parka infused with Kenat's fire magic, courtesy of Heartstone. Ever since I journeyed to Niflheim to help stop Loki, long story, I made sure to carry it with me. Nestled in its warm embrace, I turned back and groped for the doorknob. There wasn't one. No door either. Instead, I found myself peering at a mile-high wall of solid ice. A glacier? You have got to be kidding me. I scrubbed a circle in the frost and peered into the glacier to see. More ice. I pounded on the slab, attacked it with my twin daggers, kicked it and screamed at it. I worked up a good sweat, but if Hotel Valhalla was somewhere on the other side, I wasn't getting back in the way I came out. I sheathed my daggers, put a hand on the glacier, and began walking, trailing my fingers on the icy wall to feel for a door, a knob, a window, something. Then the wall ended, and my frozen fingers plunged into a massive snowdrift. Growling with frustration, I shoved my hands in my pockets and turned back. The glacier was the only connection I had to the hotel, and I didn't want to lose sight of it. I'd only gone a few steps when I heard a muffled thudding in the distance. I paused. The thudding grew louder and closer. Frost giant. The possibility struck me like a slush ball in the face. I knew from past experience that some frost giants were friendly. They weren't the ones I was worried about. A solitary figure loomed into view through the driving snow. My first thought was, how can he not be freezing in those short shorts? My second was jump. I leaped to one side as Thor pounded past. Hey, wait! I started after him, but immediately skidded to a halt. Thor was letting out farts like a sputtering engine. A cloud of noxious fumes enveloped me. Gods of Asgard! I waved a hand in front of my face. What crawled up inside him and died? Coughing, eyes smarting, I almost failed to recognize the one plus of the situation. Ever hear the phrase, like a hot knife through butter? Well, substitute fart stream for knife and snowdrifts for butter. Thor's gas was melting a wide trail that made walking through Niflheim 100 times easier. I figured he would eventually end up in Asgard, so I followed in his smelly wake. Unfortunately, Thor was too fast for me to keep up. Then the blizzard filled in his trail, obliterating it completely. I swallowed my rising panic and pushed on through the stinging snow. For a while, all I heard was the whine of the wind and my own heavy breathing. But then a new sound entered the mix. A gurgling, like water. I stopped, thinking. Water might mean a river or a stream. Maybe I could follow it out of Niflheim. With Thor's trail gone, it seemed like my best option. I detoured and headed toward the sound. The air gradually warmed. I quickened my pace. The driving snow changed into fat, wet flakes that gave way to a thick gray mist. I took off my parka, folded it back into a square, and stuck it in my pocket. The gurgling changed too, to a bubbling, like water coming to a boil. I paused. Good thing I did. The fog parted momentarily to reveal a vast, steaming body of water directly ahead of me. A few more strides and I'd have stepped off a steep bank into its inky black depths. What is this place? My mind sifted through my knowledge of the 9 worlds and came up with the answer. It's Hvergelmir, the hot spring surrounding the roots of Yggdrasil. Yes! I did a little happy dance. If I could get to the tree's roots, I could climb Yggdrasil back to Asgard or some other more hospitable world. Peering through the mist, I could just make out the twisted and humped roots sticking out of the black water like the knees of cypress trees, only much, much bigger. I caught a quick glimpse of Yggdrasil's trunk stretching skyward from their midst before the steam shrouded it from my view. So, my Niflheim exit was out there. Getting to it, however, presented some problems. I'm a decent swimmer, but I wasn't convinced I could make it across Hvergelmir without being boiled alive by the hot spring water. With my Inherji power, I could have tried jumping the whole expanse, but the mist made it difficult to see where the water ended and the roots began. If I misjudged the distance, who knew where I might land? There's got to be a way, I thought. I circled the pool. On the opposite side, I spotted an undulating route stretching to the shoreline like a long section of roller coaster. It was treacherously slick with humidity and green moss, but it was the only bridge I could see over the water. Sweat beading down my face and hands feeling for purchase, I crawled across the route inch by inch. After what seemed an eternity, I reached the other side. I rolled off onto moist, loamy earth. I picked my way through the outer roots and sat against one, near Yggdrasil, to catch my breath. The root twitched. Gasping, I scrambled back. Nothing in my memory bank said Yggdrasil could move. I looked closer at the root. It was brown and green, but unlike the other mossy roots twisting around it, this root looked decidedly scaly. While my mind processed that fact, I heard a chewing sound. My heart sank. It's not a root. It's Needhog's tail. In my rush to get to Yggdrasil, I'd forgotten about Needhog, the dragon that lives at the World Tree's base. Needhog spends his days gnawing on the tree's roots and trading taunts with an eagle that nests in the treetops. Ratatosk, the gigantic insult squirrel, acts as go-between, delivering messages from roots to treetop and back again. Now, I myself am a fan of the barbed word. Insults come in handy with an oafish lout like Halfborn. But to cast aspersions upon one another for millennia, the way the eagle, dragon, and squirrel do? I'd never let our relationship reach that level of dysfunction. Needhog's green and brown body was coiled around the base of the tree. To climb out of Niflheim, via Yggdrasil, I'd first have to climb over Needhog. That prospect did not thrill me, especially when I spied the claws on his powerful back legs. I moved to look for the dragon's head. Always know where the dangerous mouth parts are, is my motto, and put my foot right into a pile of bones. Crunch! Apparently, Yggdrasil's roots weren't the only things Needhog gnawed on. I unsheathed my daggers, expecting the dragon to attack at the sound. Instead, he muttered to himself, "That eagle thinks he's all that. Well, my new insult will be so scathing he'll molt his feathers. Now all I have to do is think it up." A gleam of hope sparked inside me. Needhog needed an insult? I had a million of them. Maybe we could cut a deal. One eagle-bashing zinger for safe passage up the tree. No guarantee Needhog wouldn't devour me on sight, of course. But it was the only plan I had, so I went for it. I kicked a ribcage off my foot and swaggered around the tree as if I owned the place. "Hey there!" Startled, Needhog stopped in mid-mutter. He stared at me, his huge yellow eyes blinking in confusion. Then, nostrils flaring dangerously, he let out a bellow that doubled as an impressive display of razor-sharp fangs. My heart faltered, but I swallowed my fear and pressed on. "Is that supposed to intimidate me?" I made a big show of rolling my eyes. "I've heard louder roars from Thor's butt." Needhog flinched as if I'd whacked him on the nose with a rolled-up newspaper. "That wasn't very nice." He sounded so hurt, I almost felt sorry for him. Instead, I snorted with derision. "Buddy, I insult everyone." I waved my daggers. "See these? They're sharp, but not as sharp as my tongue." "Or your fangs," I added to myself as the dragon loomed in closer to inspect my blades. "Wow, those are pointy." Needhog looked genuinely impressed. "Are your insults really sharper than that?" "Mister, that question is so dumb it makes me think your brain is like Odin's left eye socket. Completely empty." Needhog winced. "Wow, that really hurt. But you're right, of course." He tapped a dagger-like claw against his skull. My brain is empty. Of insults, anyway. That was my opening. I sheathed my daggers and cocked my head to one side as if considering something. You know, I have some powerful one-liners that never fail to infuriate. I'd be willing to share a few, but what's in it for me? Needhog scratched his belly. Well, for starters, I won't eat you, he offered. Tell you what, let me climb up Yggdrasil when we're done, and you've got a deal. Needhog stuck out a claw. I thought he was going to slice me to ribbons, but then I realized he wanted to shake on it. I did so very carefully. Okay, I said. Now listen closely. Needhog swept down and pressed his ear to my mouth. Not that closely. Sorry, he backed off. Right. Let's start with the four classic retorts. One, I know you are, but what am I? Two, I'm rubber, you're glue. Whatever you say bounces off me and sticks to you. Three, takes one to know one. And four, so's your face. Needhog's eyes widened with astonishment. Those are brilliant. His bellow blew my hair back. Let's test them out. I shrugged. You are one ugly snake. Needhog recoiled, the wounded expression back on his face. That was your cue to use one of the retorts, I explained. His face cleared. Oh, yeah, ha ha. Let's try again. You are one ugly snake. I know I am, but what are you? He smiled with delight. I am never getting out of here, I thought. Out loud, I said. Let's go over that wording again. After a few more sample rounds, Needhog got the hang of it. By then, I was enjoying myself, so I threw in some simple bird-themed taunts for him to use against the eagle. You're so loony, cuckoos think you're crazy. No birds of a feather would want to flock together with you. And I heard you taste like chicken. In retrospect, that last one might have been a mistake. When Needhog heard it, his stomach growled. He gave me a sideways, hungry look. So, want to stay for dinner? I casually sidled away from his mouth region. Much as I'd love to, I should get back to Valhalla. Okay if I climb up over your coils now? I'm rubber, you're glue. I took that as consent. I'd never been happier to feel Yggdrasil's bark beneath my fingers. I scurried up the trunk, scrambled through the branches, and finally found an opening to another world. I didn't know which one it was until I tumbled out onto floor 19, right at Halfborn's feet. Mallory, he yelled. I've been looking all over for you, woman. You are the most reckless, foolhardy Inher Yi. I got to my feet and glared at him. Then I hurled myself into his arms. Oh, yeah, I murmured against his bare chest. Well, takes one to know one.
Vanaheim. Well, that was a surprise. By Halfborn Gunderson. Someone stood in the hallway outside my door. I tensed. Waiting. Listening. Knock, knock. Knock. Knock, knock, knock. That was the sign. I opened the door. Get in, quickly. Alex Fierro skirted past me with a bundled-up towel in his arms. I glanced up and down the hallway, then closed the door. I turned to find Alex rolling his eyes. I still can't believe you made me use a secret knock. He handed me the towel, then dusted off his pink cashmere sweater vest and lime green pants. I showed him a mangled slice of pizza. Mallory tried to get in a few minutes ago. I had to be sure it was you and not her coming back to trash the place. Yeah, your peephole wouldn't work at all. Oh, I forgot about that. Anyway, I led him into my arts and crafts room. That's right, arts and crafts. There's more to me than just fighting to the death. I'd started with the basics, finger paints and macaroni sculptures, glitter glue on paper hearts, string art and coat hanger mobiles, and worked my way up to finer artistic endeavors. Alex gaped when he saw my latest project. Dude, it's huge. I shrugged. Go big or go home, right? The project was a mosaic for Mallory, made from an assortment of found and recycled objects, weapon fragments, pebbles from different worlds, shards of shattered glass. Alex, Floor 19's resident potter, had brought me pieces of broken pottery, which he'd handcrafted by hurling unsatisfactory pots against a wall. I unrolled the towel and inspected the shards. These are perfect. Thanks. Now I just need veneer dragon scales. Why veneer dragons? Alex wanted to know. They're red, yellow, and orange, perfect for battlefield flames, blood, and gore. See, I'm depicting Mallory's and my first battle together. Aw, half-born? Alex chucked me under the chin. You're a romantic. I'm also behind schedule. I want to give it to her on the battle's anniversary next week. I gotta get to Vanaheim and back before Mallory really does break down my door. Alex uncoiled his garrote from his belt. Want a wingman? Nah, I got this. I opened a closet full of weapons and selected an axe and a shield from my collection. Could you stay here, though, and make sure Mallory doesn't get in? Alex grimaced. I'd rather fight a dragon than face your angry girlfriend, but sure. I'll hang out here until you get back. Thanks. I owe you one. Alex smiled. I'll take you up on that sometime. Weapons securely in place, over my Tough Mudder t-shirt. I loved those Midgard obstacle course challenges. I made my way through the hotel hallways to the kitchen and the enormous walk-in refrigerator in the feast hall food prep area. The quickest way to Vanaheim was via fresh produce. I went feet first into the potato bin and landed at the bottom of a gentle rolling hill in Folkvanger, the Vanir realm of the afterlife. I surveyed my surroundings. The hill was covered with sweet-smelling wildflowers and dancing butterflies awash in warm, glowing light. The power of Freya, goddess and ruler of Vanaheim, washing over the realm. On the hilltop, Freya's hand-picked warriors lounged on blankets, laughing and sipping chai. I scowled. Peace, butterflies, chai. This world was awful. A high-pitched trumpet blast suddenly pierced the air. A cry to battle. My berserker instincts kicked in as if someone had flipped an on switch. With a mighty roar, I tore off my Tough Mudder tee and charged up the hill. Nothing I'd ever encountered in Asgard prepared me for what came next. The trumpet blast segued into a soft jazz tune. Brush drumsticks shushed out a whispered rhythm, while other instruments, a piano, a clarinet, a bass guitar, wove a melody of notes through the air. The lilting music rolled over me like warm syrup on a stack of Sunday brunch pancakes. It was horrible. I dropped my axe, fell to my knees, and clutched my ears. Whoa, buddy, you okay? A dark-haired girl in a bikini top and sarong stared over at me with concern. She poked her blanket mate with her elbow. Hey,
I think this dude needs some herbal supplements.
No, I stumbled to my feet. I'm fine. Just point me towards Sesrum Nir, and I'll be on my way.
You'll miss the clarinet improv solo, she warned.
I shuddered. No, I really won't. The girl shrugged.
Your loss. Freya's palace is down the hill, past the volleyball court. Keep calm and bebop on. Who was that?
I heard her friend ask as I hurried away.
From the looks of him, I'd say someone who likes.
She lowered her voice to an embarrassed whisper.
Polka music.
She wasn't wrong. Give me a good Oompa band over what they were listening to any day. I continued on to Sesrum Nir, Freya's upside-down ship-slash-palace of gold and silver, to seek the goddess's permission to hunt the dragons of her land. Inside, warriors lined the aisle to Freya's throne. Dozing warriors in hammocks, that is. Freya's throne was empty. I shook a sleeping blonde man in an unbuttoned Hawaiian shirt, tattered Bermuda shorts, and Birkenstock sandals. Wake up! Where's Freya? The guy blinked sleepily.
Who are you?
Halfborn. Where's the goddess?
Halfborn.
The guy said my name like he was testing it out.
What's that short for?
Nothing. He chuckled in amazement.
Halfborn is short for nothing? It's so weird how names work, isn't it?
He stuck out his hand.
I'm Miles, and sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but Freya's not here right now. I'd be super pumped to help you out, though.
Speaking of super pumped, he pointed to my bulging biceps and six-pack abs.
Did you get ripped like that by going vegan?
I ignored his question and got right to my own. Whose permission do I need to hunt your dragons? I need some of their scales. Miles scratched his head in confusion.
Hunt our dragons?
Dude, they sleep harder than our warriors do. I mean, it'd take something pretty substantial to wake them up. You want scales? Just walk up and take them.
Most people would have been relieved when a potentially deadly task turned out to be non-life-threatening. I am not most people. I prefer to earn things, not have them handed to me.
Still, I'd come for dragon scales, so I set my disappointment aside.
Where are the caves of these sleeping dragons, then?
Caves? Miles laughed. You're not really from around here, are you?
No.
Thank the gods, I added silently.
Miles spread his arms out wide and looked up.
Our dragons slumber under the open sky, basking in the light of Freya.
He dropped his arms. Come on, I'll take you there.
No.
I mean, you could just point the way.
It's no trouble, man. Follow me.
I gritted my teeth. Super. Miles led me toward a distant canyon of soft, red-gold sandstone.
I know. Let's take this opportunity to get to know one another better.
Let's not and say we did.
I'll go first, Miles continued. My favorite flower is the daisy. It's just so darned cheerful. Do you have a favorite flower, Halfborn?
No.
Oh, come on now.
He glanced at me sideways. You must like tulips. Everyone likes tulips. Know why?
No.
Because without tulips, you couldn't kiss. He whooped and shoulder bumped me.
Get it? Tulips? Like, two lips?
He made kissy sounds. I nearly unleashed a heavy dose of berserk on him. Instead, I said, there is one plant I admire, the Venus flytrap.
Miles nodded enthusiastically.
Interesting. Why that one, exactly?
I turned on him. Because it attacks its prey and then slowly and painfully consumes it. That shut him up. We reached the canyon. The wind had carved one side into wavy ledges that hung over the floor like shade canopies. Four dragons, one gold, one red, and two orange, snored in a hollow at the bottom,
their scales glowing in the Freya light. Their wings were tucked in tight to their serpentine bodies. White smoke puffed from their nostrils, like balls of cotton. In other words, the dragons were non-life-threatening. Helping myself to their scales would be a piece of cake. "I hate cake," I murmured, as I started down the incline. Lucky me, Miles came along. We were halfway down when a figure barreled over the canyon's edge on the far side. Miles blinked.
"Hey, that's Thor, and he's... oh!"
Thor charged straight through the dragons. Apparently, being kicked by a thunder god constitutes something pretty substantial. The dragons awoke with loud snorts. The clan erupted in chaos. Powerful wings flapping, the foursome took to the air, screeching in fury. I darted beneath a sandstone overhang.
"Ooh, pretty!"
Miles shaded his eyes and pointed at the dragons.
"Are you crazy?" I yelled. "Take cover!"
Miles waved his hand dismissively.
"No need, my friend. The dragons would never attack the honored dead of Folkvanger. Doing so would disrupt the peace of the realm. They'll just fly around a bit and then go back to sleep."
Then a look of mild concern crossed his face.
"Of course, you're not one of Freya's chosen slain. If they're hungry and they smell you... oh, look! There's something you don't see every day."
"What?"
"Fire breath."
I flung my shield up in front of me just as the orange dragons swooped past my overhang. Their flames superheated the metal, but didn't touch me. They flew on and circled back for another pass.
"This is more like it," I thought. I leaped out and went to rip off my Tough Mudder tee. Then I remembered that I'd ripped it off earlier, so I went straight to going berserk.
I raced down to the canyon floor. One orange dragon landed next to me. A few well-placed swings of my axe took it out of commission permanently. I dodged a burst of fire from the second orange one, then darted in and whacked off its head.
"Douse that flame," I cried. "Dude!"
Miles was scrambling out of the canyon.
"You've got anger issues."
"I know!" The cranberry red dragon gave a shriek of rage and dive-bombed me. It came a little too close for comfort. Its comfort, that is. I delivered a knockout blow to its nose with my shield, then cleaved its skull in two.
"Bring it on!" I bellowed.
The last dragon was by far the biggest. Its glinting gold scales nearly blinded me as it rushed in for the kill. I sidestepped, leaped onto its back, and rode it into the annoyingly beautiful Freya light-drenched sky. The dragon bucked, writhed, and barrel-rolled, trying to unseat me. I put my axe handle across its throat and pulled back hard. It gasped and clawed at the handle, but I hung on tight. Then it stopped thrashing and spun in a slow death spiral to the canyon floor. Boom! Its body kicked up a cloud of sand.
Arr!
Roaring in triumphant glory, I leaped off and pounded my shield with my axe.
Dude! Whoa!
I looked up to find Miles staring at me open-mouthed in astonishment. Around him was a crowd of Vanaheim warriors. A few shifted and murmured uneasily. The dark-haired girl in the bikini top moved forward.
"They're dead."
A tear traced down her cheek. It occurred to me then that while she, Miles, and the rest of Freya's chosen were technically warriors, they might never have seen an actual battle, let alone been in one.
"Well, yes, they're dead," I said carefully. "But if they'd succeeded in charbroiling and eating me, then I'd be dead. For good."
The girl looked at me blankly. "Because I'm an Inherji." The girl still looked puzzled. "If I die outside Valhalla, I stay dead. Unlike the dragons, who, being mythical creatures, will vanish into Ginnungagap and eventually be reborn." The girl's face cleared.
"The dragons will be reborn?"
She grabbed her friend's hands and started jumping up and down and squealing.
We'll have baby dragons here soon. So cute.
She beamed at me.
Thank you so much for killing them.
Yeah, don't mention it.
Miles came forward then. He looked from the dragon's hacked up and pulverized bodies to my axe and sweaty, blood-streaked torso. Then he looked down at his own rangy frame and back to the bodies. He nodded with understanding.
So, your secret is the caveman paleo diet, not veganism, huh?
I thumped my chest. Caveman paleo all the way, my man. Now, if you'll excuse me. I hefted my axe and raked some scales from each dragon onto my shield. I have a mosaic to finish.
Muspelheim. I Play with Fire by Alex Fierro. Aw, you two are so cute together it makes me sick. So I'm going back to my own room. I'm not sure Mallory and Halfborn even heard me when I left. They were lip-locking so hard. Seeing them like that almost made me miss Magnus. Almost. He was away visiting his cousin, Annabeth Chase. She'd advised him to leave his magic sword, Jack, a.k.a. Sumarbrunder, the Sword of Summer, with me. So, while Mallory and Halfborn were smooching, I returned to my room to hang out with the Talking Blade. Jack was slumbering on the decorative sword stand Blitzen had recently handcrafted for him. At least I think he was slumbering. Hard to tell with a sword, no eyes. I'd been working on a new pot when Halfborn had called looking for some shards. Now I returned to my wheel. As I worked the slick spinning clay under my fingers, I felt myself undergo a subtle shift. I'd been identifying as male when I was with Mallory and Halfborn, and earlier when I was with Samira and her fiancé, Amir. Now I was female. And yes, the change really is that simple sometimes. Hence the term gender fluid. I was deep into my new pot when Jack suddenly leaped up from his stand. The runes running down his blade pulsed an alarming red.
Señor! Señor! He cried.
Then he paused as if looking at me. Again, hard to tell because of the whole no eyes thing. Regardless, he picked up on my gender change.
Sorry? Señorita! Señorita!
Jack, chill. Take a breath. Wait. Do you breathe?
No time for that now. I just heard a rumor via the underground weapon network that Surt, the Fire Lord of Muspelheim, is hatching a new nefarious plot.
Oh my gods, I cried. There's an underground weapon network?
Of course there is, Jack retorted. Think about it. What's the one thing all nine worlds have in common?
Thor's footprints and lingering fart stench?
Well, yes. But the answer I was looking for is weapons. And we talk. Gossip, really, if you want to know the truth. So, I heard the rumor about Surt from your garrote, who heard it from an arrow in Alfheim, who heard it from a mace in Jotunheim, who heard it from a vegetable peeler in Vanaheim. Who, a vegetable peeler?
Jack shuddered.
Hope that you never hear a carrot screaming as it is being flayed by that dread instrument of torture, chica. Anyway, the communique traces all the way back to Muspelheim.
From the way he was slicing back and forth through the air, I could see that Jack was truly agitated. I was afraid he might pop a rune or something if I didn't start taking him seriously. Plus, Magnus trusted Jack with his life, literally. So that meant I trusted Jack, too. I went to the bathroom sink to wash my hands. Okay, what is Surt's plot? Jack sank his pommel down onto my couch and leaned his blade back against the cushions.
I don't have the details, but if it's Surt, it can't be good.
So what are we waiting for? I dried my hands on a towel embroidered with the hotel's initials, HV, then tossed it in the general direction of the hamper. Sheath up, and let's hit the tree. No, I can't go. I won't be able to resist the black one. Jack sounded miserable, and I remembered something Magnus had told me about how, come Ragnarok, the black one was destined to wield Jack and free Fenris Wolf. When they last encountered Surt, Jack had felt the pull of destiny and practically leaped out of Magnus's grasp to join the Fire Lord. If Jack came near Surt again without Magnus there to hold him back? Hey, no, of course you can't, I said hurriedly. You stay here, safe and sound, and Surt free. Sam's back from her special assignment, so I'll grab her, and we'll get Hearth and Blitz and... Jack flew to a few inches in front of my face, his runes flashing in a jarring disco light display. No! Surt can detect and harrier, and elves, dwarves, and valkyries! You must do this alone! I waved my hands in the air. Hello? Aren't you forgetting one little detail? I'm an Enherji. What's to prevent Surt from sniffing me out? Jack went quiet again. Use your shape-shifting powers. You'll be okay if you keep changing form, he finally said. Plus, your gender fluidity will throw him off. He won't be able to get a lock on you. I raised an eyebrow. No offense, but you don't sound too sure about that. I am sure. Well, pretty sure anyway. Sort of. Not exactly confidence-inducing, but I couldn't just sit around while the black one hatched a sinister plan of some sort. I'd had enough of that kind of thing in my afterlife already, thank you very much. If there was a chance I could stop him before he started, I had to take it. So I looped my special golden garrote, the one the goddess Sif had given to me, around my waist. I moved to my atrium, intending to climb through the world tree until I hit an entrance to Muspelheim. But Jack stopped me. Take the service elevator, he advised. I hear the captain of the Valkyries once got blowtorched when the doors opened, so it must lead right to Muspelheim. That tidbit of info gave me pause. Quick question, Disco Sword. What's to keep me from being turned into Enherji Flambe when I use that elevator, or while I'm roaming through Muspelheim, for that matter? Any chance your sweater vest is fire-resistant? No, it's cashmere. Oh, well, I'm out of ideas. I was too, until my gaze landed on my kiln. Gas-fueled, it looked like a steel trash can with squat legs and a pop-up lid. The interior could reach temperatures northward of 2,000 degrees, perfect for turning squishy clay pots into hard-baked earthenware. A thick layer of ceramic insulation protected me and my room from the extreme heat. With a bit of magic, I thought, I bet I could transform some of those fibers into something that will shield me from Muspelheim's fire. I was no rune master like Hearthstone, but I was no stranger to magic either. When I was alive, my mom, Loki, don't ask, had taught me an enchantment that turned my clay cutter into a deadly garrote. More recently, I'd brought a ceramic warrior named Pottery Barn to life with just a touch of my fingers. To create my shape-shifting fire shield, I combined a handful of fibers with my signature Urnes symbol, intertwined snakes that represented flexibility, and an Algitz stone I hastily borrowed without asking from Hearthstone's rune bag. If he didn't want me to take it, then why did he leave his room unlocked? I focused on turning the three things into an invisible membrane that surrounded me like a second skin. to my delight, okay, amazement, it worked. Even better, the membrane changed shape when I did. In the ultimate test, I fired up the kiln, turned into a housefly, and with Jack hovering anxiously nearby, plunged inside. I emerged completely unsinged. It was time to get going. Stay safe, Disco Sword. Jack bobbed over to my potted snake plant and hid in the broad, sword-shaped leaves. You too! I turned into an ant on the short elevator ride down to Muspelheim. A blast of fire engulfed me when the doors opened. If not for my membrane, I would have exploded like a kernel of unpopped corn. Nice welcome, I muttered. Judging by the opulent surroundings, gold and ebony-paneled walls, vaulted ceilings that glowed like embers, and several red, orange, and black silk tapestries depicting the same handsome but cruel man lording over dancing fire demons, I hadn't landed in some obscure Nowheresville, but right in the heart of Surt's palace itself. I squared my thorax with determination. Okay, time to get crawling. After going about 5 feet in 10 minutes, I came to my senses and changed into a housefly. I made much better time after that. I found the black one in a large meeting room. Elegant, long-fingered hands clasped behind his back, not a single black hair out of place. He stood staring out a huge picture window at the fiery landscape below. Seated at the table were several gods and goddesses I didn't recognize. So how did I know they were deities? They weren't covered in flames, so they weren't fire giants or demons. They weren't bothered by the heat either. No screaming or sizzling or burning to a crispy crunch. Logical conclusion? They were immortals. Surt turned, and I had to choke back a laugh. With his black-on-black-on-black attire, equally black features, and fierce black expression, he should have been intimidating. But his nose was so tiny. He was growing a new one, Magnus having sliced off his old snout in an earlier encounter, that he came off as more ridiculous than fearsome. The Lord of Fire moved with the grace of a ballroom dancer to stand at the head of the table. He pressed his fingertips to the surface. The room quieted. Then Surt spoke, and suddenly, he didn't seem so ridiculous anymore. His deep voice thrummed in my mind, pushing at my thoughts as if trying to replace them with his own, swaying me to his way of thinking. No wonder Jack was so desperate to go to him, I thought, if the deities fall under his spell. Luckily, my willpower has withstood an even greater manipulator, my mother, Loki. Again, don't ask. Carefully, so as not to draw attention to myself, I pushed back against Surt's voice. Its power slowly ebbed away until my mind was once again my own and I could listen to his words.
Odin, Thor, Frey, Loki, Surt said. They're all so focused on the coming of Ragnarok that they've forgotten what comes afterward. A new world!
He raised his arms and stood silhouetted against the picture window.
A new world will emerge when the flood waters recede. The fires die, the ice storms melt, and the earthquakes cease.
He dropped his arms and his voice and leaned forward on the table again.
That world will need gods, my friends. You could be those gods. You, who Odin and his lot have forgotten, could take their places if I deem you worthy of fighting on the right side of the war, come Ragnarok. My side.
While Surt was orating, I studied the deities. They were a mixed bag. Some ancient-looking and in traditional Viking garb. Others more youthful and wearing clothes from more recent centuries. Their appearances gave no indication of their identity, making me long for the name tags worn by the Hotel Valhalla staff. Whoever they were hanging on Surt's every word. Then Surt abruptly stopped talking. Frowning, he lifted his chin. His nostrils flared. Then he swung his head around and zeroed in on my hiding spot. I swore silently. I'd forgotten to keep changing shape, and the Fire Lord had sniffed me out. I couldn't shapeshift now, not with Surt staring directly at me. A chair scraped the floor. "What the blue blazes is that?" a goddess cried in astonishment. I assumed she had spotted me, but then she and the others rushed to the window. One jostled Surt. When he turned to glare at the offender, I shapeshifted into a flea and leaped to another location. From my new vantage point, I had a perfect view of the disturbance outside. Thor was running past, sweating bullets and yelling, "Ow! Ow! 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 Ow!" with every footfall. And no wonder. The ground in Muspelheim was covered in lava. And not the pretend kind, like in the leap on the furniture don't touch the lava game. Surt stalked to the window. I expected him to open it and blast Thor with a fireball, but he just yanked the black silk drapes shut.
"Show's over," he barked. "If you would all resume your seats, you may now state your worthiness to join me at Ragnarok."
The first god stood up. Balding, sweaty, with a stomach that protruded over his belt, he reminded me of a foreman on a low-budget infrastructure project.
"The name's Holler," he bellowed. "God of disease, destruction, and disaster. Let me play for your team, and I will strike down the masses with devastating head colds. Then I'll follow up with a leaky faucet epidemic and a rash of teeth-rattling potholes."
"Interesting."
Surt scratched a few notes on a yellow legal pad.
"Next."
A pinched-faced spinster type with ramrod straight posture rose from her chair and smoothed out her pinafore.
"I am Snotra."
Once again, I almost gave myself away by laughing. I changed into a cockroach. For some reason, I was defaulting to bugs, and skittered beneath a sideboard. Snotra reminded the others that she was the goddess of prudence and self-discipline.
"I will make sure the giants attack in an orderly fashion. No cutting the line, no horsing around, no..."
She drew herself up and tightened her thin lips disapprovingly.
"Gum chewing. And I will organize a chore chart of post-Ragnarok duties."
Surt
murmured.
"Quite fastidious of you."
The other deities stood up in turn. Some, like Snotra and Holler, had actual plans to propose. The rest were prepared to throw in with Surt because they had grievances with the current gods in power. For Seti, the cigar-smoking god of justice, complained about not being part of Odin's inner circle.
"The Allfather kept me out of the big decisions. Like where and how to tie up Loki, you know? I'm with you, though. New world comes and then boom! I'll be the big cheese in charge. Present company excluded, of course, my lord," he added hurriedly when Surt frowned.
The goddess Gloom, who looked and sounded exactly like her name, was one of Frigg's handmaidens.
"I'm just so tired of being in her shadow all the time," she said. "I want to have a chance to shine."
"And what would you do if given that chance?"
Surt prodded. Gloom stared at him.
"Do?"
A goddess in a dowdy shirt and shapeless skirt cupped Gloom's face in her hand and gave it an affectionate shake.
pretty young thing like you, you don't need to do. You need someone to do for you. A husband!
She glanced over at Forseti, then leaned close to Gloom. I'm Lofen, she whispered, goddess of arranged marriages. She handed her a business card. Call me. We'll talk. More gods and goddesses introduced themselves. I hadn't heard of any of them, which made me a little sad. I know what it's like to be pushed aside. It stinks. And yet, with each new deity that spoke, my tension grew. They might be a motley crew, I reminded myself, but they still add to Surt's power. I had to get them to come back to our side, or at least not join his. But how? Surt began detailing his plans for his new world order. Once again, the deities fell under the spell of his hypnotic voice. I had to find a way to break that spell. Then it hit me. I'd put a bug in their ears. Literally. I changed into a gnat and flew near Snotra. Surt thrives in chaos, I whispered in her ear. Do you really think he'll let you create order? To Holler, I murmured, what place will a god of destruction have in a new world where the goal is to build? Surt will expect something from you, I breathed in Gloom's ear. Do you really want that kind of pressure? Around the table I went, sowing whispered seeds of dissent. When I'd finished, the deities were looking at Surt with suspicion. The Black One sensed the change in attitude. He slowly rose from his seat.
My friends, you have outlined what you have to offer. Now perhaps you need a reminder of what I bring to the table.
He thrust his hand in the air and summoned his sword of pure white flame. The gods and goddesses cowered. Throwing his head back and laughing, Surt grew to his full giant size.
You minor, forgotten, pathetic deities! So easy to bend to my will! Not one of you would dare to defy me!
I chose that moment to shapeshift into a bee, buzz up Surt's teeny tiny nose, and jab him with my stinger. With a howl of pain, Surt dropped his sword and shrank to his previous size. I changed into my true form. I dare! I whipped one end of my golden garrote around his neck and yanked it tight. Then I snatched up his flame sword and with one upward flick, sliced off his pubescent nose. Jack and Magnus send their regards. Surt lunged for me. I transformed into a bighorn sheep and headbutted him right where his nose used to be. Then I changed back to human, tightened the garrote until his eyes bulged, and threatened him with his own sword. Come at me again, I warned, and you'll regret it. I surveyed the stunned deities. If one Enheri can do this, imagine what all of us can do, and will do, come Ragnarok. We are not destined to win, but we will fight with honor. We would welcome you on our side of the fight, but if you must side with him, I gave the garrote a vicious tug and was rewarded with a gurgle from Surt. Know this, I will personally hunt you down on the last battlefield of Vigridir and see that you are sent straight to Ginnungagap. The choice is yours. The deities vanished. I nodded. Yeah, that's what I thought. I admit it, I was feeling a bit full of myself. Then I realized my predicament. I couldn't return to Valhalla, not with Surt wrapped in my garrote. Odin frowns on bringing nasties like him into his realm. And if I let Surt go, he'd attack me. The flaming rage in his eyes made that pretty clear. I was starting to panic, just a little, when I heard a distant ding. Sam, Hearth, Blitz, Halfborn,
TJ and Mallory charged in, weapons drawn and ready, only to skid to a halt when they saw me with Surt on a leash